The Real Estate Unsuccess Stories podcast features people from the real estate community sharing real stories about their struggles, pains, and even losses during their own real estate journey. We share these real experiences so you can learn from them and build a successful journey of your own. Now, here's your host, Cody Lewis, one of the managing partners at Vindu Capital, located in Charleston, South Carolina.
Hey everyone, thanks for joining us again. I am so excited to have you, but let me tell you, I'm even more excited to have our guest on today. He is the managing partner at Small Axe Communities, Nico Salgado. Nico, thank you for joining us today. How are you, sir?
Hey, Cody, man, I am doing great. How are you?
Oh, I am fantastic. Thank you for asking. I'm really excited to have you on. So for those that maybe haven't run into you on the interwebs yet or seen your social or listened to your podcast, would you mind just giving our listeners a little bit about yourself, where you're from and how you got into real estate?
Yeah, man, absolutely. So born and raised in New York on a little island called Long Beach on the south shore of Long Island, New York. And I became a school teacher, a Spanish teacher back in 2004. I've been teaching ever since. And along the way, I began learning about real estate just through friends that were also investing in real estate, as well as me, myself. I dabbled in it in a little bit. In 2012, I bought a piece of property down in Nicaragua because I'm a big surfer and I found a beautiful spot down there. So I said, let me just buy a piece of land. And then a few years later, I ended up building a house on it. And, you know, it appreciated pretty quickly. We spent about 60 grand on it. Now I have it up for sale actually for about 107 grand. So a little bit of appreciation play there. And I learned, you know, that I can have something, not be there, not take care of it, and still have it earn me income because I have a property manager down there that's running it, doing it as an Airbnb. And it's just something that can provide income as well as appreciation on the back end. So I was hooked from then. I began looking at duplexes here in New York, realized fairly quickly that it was way too expensive for me to be able to model out something that was going to be sustainable in the future. I was at that time in 2018, I was, you know, I could buy one, you know, with some friends, but it just wasn't something that I was going to be able to do sustainably. Like I said, I mean, it would have taken me 10 plus years to buy another one. And we're looking at only a few hundred dollars cash flow each month. That was not the path to financial freedom. So I was looking on the interwebs, as you just called it, and I found the Jake and Gino community. I was just on, I think I was on BiggerPockets, and I was like just asking questions about multifamily because I saw people talking about multifamily. And for me, multifamily meant duplexes, right? And then somebody, I think it was Dylan Marma, reached out to me on BiggerPockets and said, have you heard of Jake and Gino? And I said, no. And I was actually looking for a mentor at that time because I was trying to do a project on my own here in Long Beach, New York, which turned out to be a development project because I was looking at like seven triplexes that needed to be knocked down and rebuilt. And the cost of doing that was about $21 million here in New York. And I went through a lot, you know, to try to make that happen. And I said, you know, I got to a point where after talking with the city hall, I got to a point where I said, I don't even know what I'm doing and I have no access to capital. I need a mentor. I need help. So Dylan Marma, we connected on LinkedIn. He used to work for Jake and Gino. Now he's doing his own thing. And I still actually talk to him quite frequently. He's a really, really knowledgeable dude. And he's down in Tampa. And he connected me with Jake and Gino. I had one intro call with Josh Rusin. And I loved the guy. And I said, this is really cool. Then one call with Dylan and then another call with Josh. And then Josh was like, why don't you just join this community, man? We're having a buy right boot camp in 2 days. Why don't you come down and do it? And this was November of 2019. And I said, heck yeah, man, let's do it. So I ended up getting my friend who works for JetBlue. She gave me a $40 ticket to fly standby. I said, let's go. So it took me like 30 hours to get down there, got down there and really enjoyed the buy right boot camp. And from then that was it, man. I was like, my eyes were open. I don't think I slept at all that whole weekend. I said, this is it. I love this. Let's do it.
Yeah. I love that. Once you get the feel and you see the scale that something like multifamily can bring, it's one of those things that your eyes are wide open. It's like you were walking through life completely asleep. And now it's like, oh, there's this thing out here that I can, to your point earlier in your story, you can make passive income and then keep having appreciation happen along the way, which yep. that's what we're all chasing. So you mentioned you got in with Jake and Gino, but I would imagine like many of us, it not everything's been perfect. You've probably had some bumps and bruises, some learns along the way. And we wanted to bring you on and hopefully talk about some of those today.
Absolutely. Let's do it, man. So I realized right away that what I needed to do was be an active investor. You know, ideally, we think about passive income. And yes, as an active investor and as a passive investor, you can get passive income. But what I realized that I didn't have the capital to go in and just place money into a deal and be and receive dividends or returns passively. I needed to work, use a sweat equity to get some equity in a deal so that I can then, you know, get some passive income, right? Or it's, at that point, I guess it's not even passive because we're actively working for it, right? So I realized right away that I was going to have to work hard. And I didn't think that I was going to be working forever, you know. Typically, you know, you can get into a few deals and you can start, you know, if you have enough equity in those deals, you can begin earning or replacing your income, your W-2 income, me as a Spanish teacher. And the goal was within 5 years to do so. So I picked a market right away. I focused on the Tampa market because I was traveling down there. I have friends and family that live there. It's a very hot market. And I thought that that was a good thing until I realized 12 months in, I still hadn't had a deal. And I was working hard, man. I'm not one of those guys who like, well, you know, every few days, take a look at a deal. I was looking at every single deal that came to market, underwriting every single deal. I had weekly calls with coaches, plus my, you know, two different coaches. And I was just learning the process, learning underwriting, building the back end, the business, the Small Axe brand name, the website, an investor list, a meetup, a podcast, doing everything that I possibly could to get into a deal. And I still didn't find a deal. So 12 months in, however, my partners or people that I was talking with in the Jake and Gino community offered me a position as a co-sponsor on a deal that they had found in Columbus, Ohio. So it wasn't in my market. I knew nothing about it. I hadn't been focusing on there, but it was 12 months almost to the day that I got in that deal and we closed that deal as a syndication.
Man, that's awesome. So let me make sure I walk through that. So 12 months in, and I want to make sure people hear this, you still hadn't found a deal, because I know oftentimes people probably think, well, I can jump into this right away and I'm just going to start making money and cash flowing things within a month or two. And then I'll be able to replace my job, my W-2 job within a year or two. But that's not realistic always. Most people probably are in your shoes where it's going to be a while before they're able to do that. What kind of research were you able to do or that made you interested in the Columbus, Ohio deal outside of just the time frame of having started the year before and looking for that first deal? I would imagine there are maybe some other opportunities to invest. What made this one and what kind of research went into making this one good and the right one for you?
So it's funny you asked that. So this team of people, these group of guys, the sponsor team, right? They had come to me back in the spring of that year, which was 2020, looking to find a deal in Tampa because I was then known in the Jake and Gino community as the Tampa guy. They came to me looking for deals in Tampa. We looked at a bunch of deals together, put in a bunch of offers together, didn't get anything. They found this deal in Columbus, Ohio through a partnership that they had formed prior to meeting me. And they actually found this deal and closed it in the summer of 2020 cash. They closed it in 2 weeks. They had like no inspection contingency. They just closed it and got it for a crazy deal, almost half price cash. So they asked me at that time, do you want to be part of it? And it was really more of like a courtesy because we had become friends and they liked the way I worked. They liked what I was up to. And I said, no, thank you. I said, I don't know anything about the market and I don't feel confident. I'm known as the Tampa guy. I got to bring a Tampa deal. 3 months later, they come back to me and say, are you sure you don't want part of this deal? So at that point, I said, screw it. I'm going to look outside my market. Like I said, it had now been like 10 months. I hadn't found anything. And I ended up underwriting the deal. I really liked the numbers. It was showing some really great returns. I was really impressed that they were able to get it for almost half price. It was it's a large portfolio, two different properties, 194 units total. So I was like, this is going to be a great experience for me. So I jumped in the deal and I had the goal of raising $500,000. I did half of that, which is typical. And it was such a struggle, man. Like, this was like during the election, it was November of 2020. And it was just, I was like, my first raise, I thought I had cultivated and curated this list of investors that was going to be ready, willing, and able to invest with me. And it was such a struggle. I had so many phone calls and turned down after turned down. And I was trying to understand why, because the deal was amazing. And it was just a wild ride that I learned a lot from.
Well, tell me a little bit about that, because I know there are some that are maybe on the capital raising phase right now, whether you do it before you find a deal or after you find a deal. I know that's always up for debate and when the best approach is. But for you, you've gone through it. You've actually done it. You found that probably like most of us, about 50% of the people are probably going to invest, maybe 50, 60%. What were some of the things that you were hearing that prevented people from investing? And I'm interested to know, you know, what were kind of your takeaways you'll take forward to all your future raises from that experience?
Yeah. So the main takeaway is that you think, let's say I have 100 investors, a list of 100 investors, I might get anywhere from 5 to 10 of them to actually invest. Now, it's a very low percentage is what I found. And it might be because I wasn't educating them enough, or it might be because I didn't, you know, cut that list down enough, right? To the real investors, because a lot of people on my list are trying to do active investing and not passive investing. So one of the main things I got was, I want to be an active investor. I want to be a GP. Can you give me a GP share? And I said no, because it wasn't my deal, right? And we already had 8 sponsors on this, so it was a large, you know, GP team. I said no. So people were out just at that. Another big thing that people were worried about is what the economy was doing. I mean, this was in the middle of COVID, during an election where things were going to change. We were changing, you know, presidents, right? And people were just nervous to invest. It's like, I don't know what's going to happen in the future, you know, which is going to always be the case. It was just kind of accelerated because of COVID and the election. Another thing that I ran into is that people were like, well, I don't know, this neighborhood is a C-class neighborhood. You know, I don't think it's going to be, it just, the demographics aren't right for me, you know? So I got that a lot too. Those were the 3 main things that people were, you know, I guess, apprehensive about when investing in this deal.
Going back and thinking about that, does that change what your avatar looks like moving forward for your ideal investor? Or if it did, what does that look like moving forward for you?
Absolutely. So I really should have been focusing the entire time on passive investors, right? So my entire list is not just based on passive investors. I was just finding people that were attending my meetups. The majority of my list came from people that attended my meetup. And Yosef Lee, my partner on the meetup, he and I realized that the majority of the people on the meetup are looking to be active investors, because we give them education about how to invest in deals. And we realized that We originally wanted to do it as a, you know, how do you invest passively? But people that were coming to the meetups were asking questions like, how do I do it active? How do I underwrite a deal? You know, how do I talk to brokers? How do I find my market? So we ended up teaching them about that and maintaining that relationship as between active investors. And on top of that, everybody that I'm connected with in the Jake and Gino community, hundreds of investors, typically want to be active investors. There are some that want to be passive, but I really should have been focusing exclusively on passive investors.
What does that look like now moving forward for trying to find those folks? Because as you mentioned, you've probably tapped out some of those resources you've already had, but they may not be the ideal ones moving forward. So how do you expand and find those passive investors beyond some of the methods you previously were using?
What I'm going to do first right now is that I'm actually switching my CRM. I was using MailChimp, and I'm going to switch over to ActiveCampaign. Once I do that, and I actually just onboarded onto an investor portal. Once I do that switch to ActiveCampaign, I'm going to be, you know, really, really utilizing a drip campaign that wasn't necessarily as powerful in MailChimp. I wasn't able to see who was opening. It's just not as robust as ActiveCampaign is. So I'm switching to ActiveCampaign to get a better feel first for who my audience is, who is actively engaged and why, and what their interests are. What I'm going to do then is, this is all happening within the next few weeks, I'm going to be sending out an invitation to sign up for my investor portal. I have no deals in there yet, but I'm going to put a mock deal. In that mock deal, people are going to have the opportunity to see the kind of deals that I'm looking for. And they're also going to have the opportunity to, you know, make a soft commit. With that soft commit, I'm going to see how many people I can or how much money I can possibly raise for the next deal. Now, then I'm going to take those numbers and see where I'm at. If I'm in the $1 million range, excellent. If I'm not, I'm going to be targeting Facebook ads and LinkedIn ads. One of my partners is really good with that. He's got automation and he's got VAs that reach out to people all the time to really go after the specific, what they do is they create like a list of basically what you're saying, an avatar, which I've done also, but they're going to do this through Facebook, where Facebook creates an avatar of somebody that is exactly like a passive investor. So we're going to get a list of passive investors. We're going to Facebook is going to study it, and Facebook is going to find more of those people, and we're going to contact them and reach out to them.
Man, I love that. And it's so good to hear, you know, that you take something from which seems like it could have been a stumbling block or even a failure, whatever you want to call it, and you learn from it, you execute even better on the back end. I love hearing those types of things and being able to learn, because then they're not failures. They're just teaching moments.
Yeah, man. I actually almost gave up. Tell you what happened. So this Columbus deal has been very challenging because of the fact. So we haven't hit our numbers. We're actually cash flow negative at this time. We're almost a year into it now, cash flow negative. And the reason is we have a really high personal loan, high interest rate personal loan. And we couldn't refinance because of the fact that COVID slowed everything down, as you know, and as a lot of people know, with supply chain. We renovated 72 units within like 4 months, something incredible. We had our team there on site, drive up from Miami, live there. Renovated 72 units. We can't get them filled because we can't get a lot of them finished. We dropped occupancy down to 65%. I thought I was going to die. I have investors invested in this. We came back up. Thankfully, right now we're at about 85%. So we're just getting ready to start the refinance process. But we had supply chain issues with cabinets and appliances. Terrifying. And we have made no distributions yet. And thank God my investors that had invested with me are all my friends. Otherwise, it could have been a very difficult situation.
Sure. Well, and that's an important thing to know is that, hey, in these uncertain times, sometimes you have to plan for uncertain situations and you never know what's going to happen. So make sure you possibly have some sort of capital reserves. I don't know if there would have been enough raised to do something like that, but, you know, we have to have unforeseen plans kind of to help mitigate these types of things. So completely understand that. And I'm sure it's a learning curve for you, but you're going to walk out of this much more knowledgeable and prepared for the next one.
Absolutely, man. I'm learning so much and I'm really fortunate that this team took me on, and I'm doing what you're doing. I'm the marketing investor relations guy. So I'm communicating with investors, you know, putting out newsletters, and it's like scary. It's like, Jesus, I have to report to these people, and it's a lot of work. And it's also just, it's a lot of pressure on you. Let me share with you quick, Cody. I know we're going to be running short on time, but I'm going to share with you a failure, an epic failure down in Tampa. So I've been looking, now it's about 18, 19 months that I've been looking in Tampa in Central Florida. I finally landed a 20 unit deal in May of 2021. Found it through a wholesaler. I was going to JV this. I had a team of four guys. One guy was boots on the ground, and the other guy, one guy is in, another guy was in Florida, and one guy's in California, just partners of mine that I've been working with. We needed to come up with about $500,000 for the down payment. It was a $2 million deal, 2.25. I negotiated with the wholesaler to get it down from 2.5 million to 2.25. We had an amazing deal. It was a 1980s build, exactly what we were looking for. Concrete block, no flood zone. And we were able to raise rent by about $200 to $300. I mean, this was it. This was I finally got it. And it was off market, right? Because it was a wholesale deal, we had to close it within 3 weeks. Because it was a wholesale deal, we had to go hard with our money. Typically, wholesale deals, as people know out there, are really for a single family or duplexes, but not multifamily. Now, we went hard, $50,000 day one. And then I told my coach at Jake and Junior, and he was like, what the hell did you do, man? You went hard? We went hard, $50,000, and we had a three-week deadline to close this thing. So, because we were so short on time to close, we ended up going with a residential appraisal instead of a commercial appraisal, because the commercial appraisal can take longer. Now, the residential appraisal we were able to do because this is technically five quadplexes, and quads, you know, not being five units, is a residential building. So we were able to do it, and we could have done the commercial way also. We talked to plenty of lenders. Now, come week three, we weren't ready to close. So we actually got a 1 week extension, And we hadn't sold it to anybody yet. So we had only had about $100,000 between the four of us to of the capital raise. With that, within that last week, we got two committed. You know, it was actually within like a few hours. We got two guys to commit $200,000 each. We were at our, we made our raise. We were ready to rock. It was going to be a joint venture. And then the night before we were going to close, we got our appraisal, the residential appraisal that we thought was going to be excellent. And our lender kept telling us it was going to be excellent. And the as-is value was perfect, but the ARV was not. We were way off. So that next day, we did not close. We couldn't get an extension. We were begging the wholesaler. We were begging the seller to give us an extension and go the traditional route. We didn't have to do this. We were going in with a bridge loan of 8%. We didn't have to go in with a bridge loan of 8%. We were only doing that because of the time constraints. So we were about to walk into a deal, losing money day one with no, we were going to have to come another $200,000 out of pocket, which we could have done because we had another investor ready. And we were going to be then looking for a, you know, to refinance within 3 months because we had no construction budget at that point. So we were going to raise another $200,000 in one day. We were going to go in with an 8% loan looking to, and no construction budget, looking to refinance within 3 months. It was just something that we were losing money day one. It was something that we were not ready to do. We walked from the deal. We lost about $60,000 on that deal.
But probably a valuable lesson. At the end of it, a very expensive lesson, but a very very valuable lesson for something like that.
It destroyed me mentally and emotionally for about a month. And today, this is a couple months later now, I feel much better, much stronger. And actually, I did learn a lot, and it really kind of pushed me in the right direction. And I think and I know today I'm headed in so much of a better direction.
That's awesome. Well, Nico, I think that's probably as good enough time as ever. There's a lot of valuable lessons there, folks. So make sure you go back and listen to this and play it again, because there's a lot of things you can take away from this one. Nico, thank you for joining us. It was a pleasure having you on. For those that do want to follow up with you, maybe work with you in the future, or just listen to your show or whatever it may be, where's the best place people can find you?
Yeah, thanks for asking, Cody. So typically I send people to my website. It's smallaxecommunities.com. That's small AXE communities, plural.com.
Perfect. Perfect. And we'll link that in the show notes for everyone to be able to grab quickly and be able to link to. So Nico, thank you again for joining us. It truly was a pleasure.
Absolutely. Thank you, Cody.
Absolutely. And we'll catch everyone next time.
You've been listening to the Real Estate Unsuccess Stories podcast with Cody Lewis. Be sure to subscribe today on your favorite podcasting platform so you can catch every episode of the Real Estate Unsuccess Stories podcast.